Blog Talk Radio.
And not only the image, but even down to the name, where it's only in modern English that we have the name Jesus. A couple of hundred years ago, that name never existed.
The mainstream media is ignoring this information. Most of the alternative media is also ignoring it.
The way.
Poetic Energy Network.
Station.
Shalom. Here we go again. Another Sabbath. We're back again. Live in the what you would call the studio. Hey man, it's going down. You already know. Each and every week it's going down on the Poetic Energy Network station with Yahuwah Side on the way, on the Sabbath, praising Yahuwah. Man, we got a lot. It ain't gonna take too long, but we got a lot of good stuff, good meat, and we're gonna, you know, chop it up with you. I hope you're having a lovely day of rest. So let's get into it. Father Yahuwah, Yahushua Mashiach name, Father, we thank you for another Sabbath, another chance to get to just chill in your presence, Father. So we thank you. We pray that you would decrease us, that you may increase. You would show us the spiritual atmosphere in the world. And you would guide us and lead us and protect us. And we pray that not our will, not our words, not our thoughts, Father, but we will only speak what thus said Yahuwah through your Ruach HaKodesh. We thank you. We love you. Please forgive us for any of our sins. In Yahushua Mashiach's name we pray. So be it. Hallelujah. Amen. So you know, we're back another Sabbath. You already know each and every week is going down. But we got some good, we always got some good info for you. You know, the biggest story, we've been keeping it up to breast about what's been going on in the Middle East, what's been going on, you know, with, you know, Iraq and Iran and Israel and Netanyahu. But this week, of course, it was pretty much the biggest story this week is what we've been watching for. You know, we're called to be watchmen, Nazarene, we're watchmen. We're called to be watchmen, so that's what we've been doing. So the story we want to really go ahead and get into is the story that just took place. I think it was actually around March 5th, Monday. So I got an article that we want to get into. We want to get down into it. Okay. So in case you don't know, Netanyahu comes to Washington, D.C. to sit down with President Barack Obama. So we know the tension has been building up with the situation with Iran, you know, the Strait of, you know, trying to close the Strait of Hormuz, and, you know, with gas prices going up, and, you know, just because of the threat of war, and the continuing going back and forth. And a lot of people don't know, we're going to talk about a little bit, the sanctions, we talked about last week about the sanctions they're putting on Iran, which, in fact, has not even really been imposed. But I want to dive into the article a little bit so you can understand, you know, what the mass media is reporting to the world, and we want to dig further into that and really go into what the Ruach is showing us. But it says Netanyahu was confident. It says was confident at his back to the, it says, with the U.S. most influential pro-Israel lobby group, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which had been instrumental in whipping demands in the Congress for stronger sanctions against Iran and resolutions that look mighty close to authorizations of war, for war. Republican presidential candidates were snapping at Obama's heels, accusing him of his weakness in indecision of the Tehran, it says, and of not supporting enough of Israel. Netanyahu made it a national appeal in his speech at the annual conference. Now, this is very interesting. Netanyahu makes a speech at the what we just call the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. He makes a speech, you know, and he invokes upon, you know, the Holocaust. Because one day we're really going to tackle the Holocaust, and we're going to show you that. I actually believe that was one of the instruments of Hasatan in able to basically uphold them to being, you know, Yahuwah's people, to act like they're Yahuwah's people, to actually kind of steal the spotlight. We're going to talk about the Holocaust one day. But Netanyahu makes this speech about the Holocaust, and he was using the example of the betrayal of European Jews by the Allies who refused to bomb Auschwitz. So there were allies of back then of Israel who refused to bomb Auschwitz. So basically he was kind of hinting to the fact that, you know, America and Obama is kind of refusing right now to bomb Iran, and he's saying that it ultimately costs, you know, Jews to be killed and, you know, all these things. You know, so at the White House, Netanyahu also presented Obama with a copy of the Book of Esther, which relates to stories celebrating in this week's holiday of Purim. It says, of the 5th century plot to destroy the Jews of Persia, now Iran. So, you know, that went down. And so this is some of the snippets from the article, because this is very interesting, man, because Yahusha kept saying, hey, watch, therefore. We continue to watch. So we got to get this out. So you can continue to spread this to other people, to keep people abreast of what's going on, and to keep people up with the temperature, because we don't want to get to the point where we're so much into the world, so much into life's daily cares. That's what Shaul said, that, you know, no soldier gets, you know, tangled down with, you know, civilian matters. You know, we are supposed to be watchmen, watching the commander, watching what's going on. But in the article, it talks about that the native emerged, it says the native emerging from Obama is that war is not American interest. So basically, I kind of looked around and searched around some other sites, and this was saying that Obama was basically saying that pretty much, pretty much war is the last option for America against Iran, you know. And Obama said Iran was not an Israeli problem, but an American one. And Obama said the Obama doctrine, it says, is that the U.S. only goes to war when its security interests are in danger. And the Obama doctrine called international coincidence consciousness before going to war. So basically, Netanyahu, after the whole meeting with them sitting down, Netanyahu had the agenda basically to get the U.S. to, he wanted to get them to the point where they're saying, hey, we'll go with you to bomb Iran and cross those lines to get to that point. And what Obama's objective was, as far as in the meeting, is like, hey, we want to hold off for a little bit. We want to see how it develops. And so Netanyahu, after this meeting, basically Netanyahu's dilemma is deciding whether, you know, because Obama pretty much stated, according to the meeting and what he portrayed, is that war is the last option in the Iran situation, and he wanted so-called Israel not to prematurely go and bomb Iran. And so Netanyahu's dilemma now is whether to defy Obama or leave it to the U.S. to decide whether and when it's time for a military option. And so that was the gist of the whole meeting. You had Obama kind of standing up, and some of the president candidates that are now there, you know, they were saying that he wasn't strong enough backing. He kind of played the lukewarm sense, and where he was in the middle, where he kind of backed him, and he also stated that Israel would have to be the leader of its own faith. And so that was one of his statements. And we're going to get into the real gritty news right here. But also one of the things that was interesting was Netanyahu said that in this situation, you know, he tried to play the sympathy card, but he said something that was very profound that I don't know if a lot of people understood. He said that they're looked upon as Obama in America being the great Satan and Israel being the little Satan. Okay? So this gets very interesting. Now, because we already know, he tried to play the sympathy card with that, basically saying, everybody say we the bullies, and they look at you, and they're like, oh, he's bad, and, you know, but in reality, he told the truth, you know, because America, Babylon, the great whore, you know, extension of Babylon, the great whore, is, you know, wicked nation. America is a wicked nation. Yes, we speak against. Yes, we live in America, but this is Babylon. This is a wicked nation. Okay? And we know about the state of Israel. All you have to do is look at their six-pointed star and understand that's the star of Moses. This is the star of you know, the Rockefellers used. This is the star of the synagogue of the congregation of, have you say it, of Hasatan. So we know that. And we know according to prophecy that the end of the matter is that the son of perdition wants to set his throne or set, you know, and rule the world out of Jerusalem. We know that. So we know that America and Rome are together. So we know that the beast, the whore, rides the beast. You know, so we know, and so all those things are important. So basically Netanyahu, that evil spirit, was saying basically kind of in this situation for right now, America's kind of leading Israel, but we know in the end that the so-called synagogue of Satan, they will eventually, you know, they have the Sanhedrin, have the son of perdition, ruling out of that. He will come, he will sit, he will be in the temple, proclaim himself to be hell. We know that they will do all these things from the land of Israel. So we know that's the end result. But Netanyahu was saying that, in this, you know, that people looking on them, and he's saying that Obama is a great Satan and they're a little Satan. So this gets very important because Netanyahu now is saying now, okay, he's waiting for basically America to take the lead, and Obama's position is let it ride out and let's see what happens. This is some very important things that, you know, who has been showing. Okay, now this summer. Because these things are important, man, because these things will eventually, and these things are connected, all interconnected to with the scriptures and with prophecy and how prophecy will unfold. Because what you have to remember, I was reading Ezra, you know, in the pocket they have Ezra. I was reading Ezra, and I think the Malach Uriel was relaying to Ezra some of very profound matters. And one of the things was saying, just like things in the end times, like, These things, what you had to understand is the seed of wickedness was planted with Adam and has increased over the years. And what you have to remember is the end will come. Like nowadays, you have, just like Shaul said, he said in the end days you will have scoffers saying, where is the coming of his promise? Like, you know, and they would say, where is this coming? You know, since the days of our fathers, everything has been the same. You know, and people will begin to say that, like, oh, everything's going to continue to be the same. Ain't nothing going to change. But what you got to remember is, that's what Uriel was telling Ezra. He said, hey, what you got to remember is, things is like, it's like this. It's like a woman being pregnant, getting to that ninth term. She can no longer hold that baby after that ninth month. She can no longer hold that baby, even though she wants to escape that pain, escape what's coming upon her. She cannot escape that. It's got to come. And so what you got to remember is that the end the end, the beginning of the end, because we know the sword has to go throughout the whole world, and then the end will come, and we know the two witnesses, Enoch and Eliyahu, has to come back. But we know that the starting point, the marker, that the point of no return is coming, is quickly coming upon us. And so a lot of people are being naive and saying, hey, you know, everything's going to seem to be, but just remember that pregnant woman. That woman cannot be pregnant forever. She got to drop that baby sooner or later. You know, that 9 months. But sooner or later, things have to unfold. And so this is what we're talking about, the things that are to watch for. Now, after this meeting, Obama projected that he would visit, there's a projected visit to Israel in July 2012. Now, there's a lot of speculation whether this will be after or before the attack on Iran. So number one, what you got to understand is Israel is now in a position, according to, we haven't gotten to the nitty-gritty news. We're just talking about what the mass media and what everybody, what's being portrayed. Okay. They're in a position, according to the mass media, where they have the choice whether to defile Obama, since Obama stated he wants them to wait in order to attack Iran, or they can wait for America to take the lead. So there's a projected visit to Israel from Obama in July. Now, this is where it gets important. Remember, sanctions have not even gone into effect against Iran, in which the sanctions of, you know, the United Nations or whatever governing body has done this, they go into effect June 28, 2012. Now, it's been stated before that Iran said, hey, if y'all go, there is still time to get this situation resolved. You know, they said we're not producing nuclear weapons. You know, this is a friendly thing. They said, if you go through with this, it is basically a declaration of war. Now, my wife found the video, and I found the same video. It talked about Ahmadinejad. It was a while back. I think it was 2007. And Ahmadinejad, we talked about it. We played a little bit of clip from it last week. Ahmadinejad, who is, if you don't know, he is the president or, you know, whatever, of the Iran. So he was sitting down with the Khazarian synagogue of Satan Jews. I mean, the black hat wearing, curls with the, you know, everything, the Zionists. But he was talking in front of them as though they were not Zionists. They were just Jews and they were friends. He was sitting down speaking lies, and this is all prophecy. So he's sitting down speaking lies to them, and he's telling them, you know, that some people might think that the Jews were Zionists and all these other things. But his whole mission was, his whole thing was, he had to, he's in a position where it's put on his heart to prepare the people for the day of this, when the son of perdition is coming. He kept talking about this man who was coming, who was going to change and, you know, bring in world peace, and, you know, there wasn't going to be any division, and, you know, and this guy is going to do this, and he's not talking about Yahushua, but he's talking about this guy who's going to do this, and he's saying that basically in the undertone it's time for them to wipe out the Jews. This is all fantasy, because the world believes, number one, that the Jews are Yahushua's people, but what you don't understand is Yahushua even said a kingdom divided against itself cannot stand. So Israel, so-called Israel, the Jewish people, they're not Yahuwah's people. They're the kingdom of Hashatan. Iran is the kingdom of Hashatan. So all these nations divided against themselves cannot stand. But the result are them coming together in order to prepare the world for the son of perdition, for the great tribulation. That's what the end result is. So yeah, it looks like everybody's divided. After, you know, Israel, they want to bomb these people. They want to bomb these people. But behind all that, when the smoke clears, you have a new world order. That's what you have. And you have the peace treaty, the 7 years. You have the 7 years divided into 3 years. You have the first 3.5 years. And you have the second 3.5 years when Enoch and Eliyahu will come and bear witness against the son of perdition, against the dude Ahmadinejad was talking about, telling everybody he is not the Messiah, but he is the false one that came into the world to do signs and wonders in order to deceive. So June 28th, 2012, the sanctions go into effect which is basically Iran said, they said, hey, this is a declaration of war to us. If y'all go through with this, if the United Nations go through with this, this is a declaration of war to us. Following that, the same month that Obama is supposed to visit in July, Israel, is the same month of what we talked about last week, the London Olympics. Now, I know I've been talking about this London Olympics, and I'm not saying it's going to happen or it's not going to happen. But I want to give you a food for thought, and let's really look at the facts. I found some interesting information right here. This is very interesting information. I looked at something called the Rockefeller Foundation. We know that, number one, that the Rockefellers have been behind a lot of things. You know, number one, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, because they own the Federal Reserve banking in London, right? In London. Okay, that's where the Federal Reserve is in London. So we talked about that. We talked about why they killed Kennedy, you know, because he wanted to go outside the Federal Reserve bank and print his own money for American people, printed by Americans, for Americans, not Federal Reserve money. Same reason they killed Abraham Lincoln is because he wanted to go outside the system of the Federal Reserve, and he wanted to go outside, basically outside the system of the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, and they killed him. So this goes on. There's an interview with Aaron Russo, who was one of the, you know, people that used to kind of see things that were going on that were an illusion. Had a meeting with one of the Rockefellers, and he told them, "Hey, we're going to go in Afghanistan. There's going to be an event where we're going to go into Afghanistan, Iraq, and all these things, and do some things and get, you know, oil." But it was all an illusion created by the Zionists. And that event was 9/11, in which they had an event in which Bush sends them into, you know, Iraq, you know, right after that, like they know. So these are all things that we kind of know. But I wanted to tell you that the Rockefeller Rothschilds, they had a plan. They came out with this thing called, they had a thing in which the Rockefeller Foundation, they put forth a synopsis of world events that could possibly happen in the near future. World events that will possibly happen. Kind of like scenarios in which things are happening. We know that, just like they said about 9/11, and it's not prophecy to them, because these people are planning it. It's like when come and plan to build, bomb a building, they're going to come bomb the building. But anyway, in the Rockefeller Foundation article, in which is written by them, this is not no, you know, piece together information, this is written by them, they said, this is one of the things, they said, this goes back to about the London Olympics, it says the years 2010 to 2020 are dubbed the doom decade for good reason. The 2012 Olympic bombing, which killed 13,000. So basically they were saying this could be an event in the future that the London Olympics, this is from the Rockefeller, this is from their desk, this is from their pen, just like they said before, that there wasn't a bombing, Olympic bombing, which killed 13,000 people. They said it's a scenario that could happen. Now, I just want to read this information now. I just want to read this information because we're not going to dive too much into it because we don't want to get off the path, but we really want to show you, hey, these are things to watch for, because we know that what was will be again. What happened? How did they take away, how did they begin the process of taking away American rights and going toward the mark of the beast, going toward Revelations 13 in which the beast will cause, in verse 16, he will cause all, both small, great, rich, and poor, free and slave, to be given a mark upon their forehead, upon their hands, which no one is able to buy or sell, except they have the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. With 666. We talked about that. We talked about the microchip. I know I'm throwing a lot at you. But we talked about that. What was the event that happened and pushed that toward the mark of the beast? See, we have to take scriptures, and we have to take events, and we have to take real life and compare them, because the scriptures are real, and they are fulfilled. and they come to life. So this is when they come to life. So you remember, after 9/11, which was created by the Zionists, an event created by the Zionists, okay, George Bush signs the Real ID Act. George Bush signed, so the Zionists create this in order to push it forth. The Zionists, the Rockefeller, who said that the end goal was to have all money on chips, these chips would be implanted in people, in which no one could buy or sell except they had the mark. This is what their plan, from their desk, from their pen, who these people are led by Satan. These people are led by Hashem. Okay, so that event happened, George Bush signs the Real ID Act. Basically, they created an event in order to scare the people, in order to take away their rights. You know, because it justifies them taking away their rights. They're not just going to do it and continue to do it and it just looks like, oh, they're taking away our rights, and then you have a mass uproar. No. They did it in such a way where the people will get behind them and say, yes, man, we have terrorists. You know, we need to, you know, have, you know, these cars. We need to have security. You know, that's the whole thing that's going to be with the Mark of the Beast is it's not going to be something that's just like, oh, you know, no, it's going to be something that, oh, you know, we can stop crime. You know, we can stop human trafficking because if everybody's, you know, identified by the chip, you know, and the RFID chip and nobody can impersonate somebody. We can know if a person is an immigrant and all this. Then we use all these factors, and yes, the Mark of the Beast will look, they will make the Mark of the Beast look attractive. They will make the Mark of the Beast look attractive. You know what I'm saying? And it will be to a point where, hey, you can't do anything except you have this. And so that event was 9/11, which pushed forward. Go back and look that up. Go back and look up George Bush, the Real ID Act. And this is going to put that, and this is pushing forward because this law is getting into a point where what people like to call Big Brother is stepping in, into which they're going to identify people by biometrics and continue to identify people in which you will be connected to the mass database, the IBM system, which we talked about, in which you cannot buy or sell. That's the end result, in which you cannot buy or sell except you have a mark. And so they create events in order to take away human rights, in order to impose their agenda, which is what they're doing. So back to the Olympics, which is something to watch for. Like I said, not sure if it's going down. I'm not saying thus saith Yahuwah. I'm saying that, you know, with some information that we have getting, that a lot of things, same month in July, which after the sanctions are going down, we have an interesting summer coming up. But they use this number 13, and we know, you know, given the number 13 is considered to be a key number used by the Illuminati to reveal a secret code of message. It says, and significant of the Rockefeller Foundation in working to bring about a new world order behind the scenes along with tax-exempt foundations. Is this report a yet another sign of planned terrorist attack in the London Olympics? Now, I just found some other information connected to this thing, because you remember before 9/11 happened, I was in high school. We didn't know about the Zionists. We didn't know about the Khazars. We didn't know that they stole the Hebrews' heritage and their homeland is, you know, 800 miles away, and they never, you know, existed, and they have stolen. And we didn't know about the curses. We didn't know about these things. We were totally alluded to these things. But now we have been informed with these things. We know how to watch. Yahusha has told us how to watch and to watch these things. So when these things happen, we won't be surprised because we have already been watching. We have already played these scenarios. We have already understood. Oh, okay. Imagine how we being in the truth would have felt if 9/11 happened and we knew about the Zionists. We knew about how they're plotting and we knew about these things. So, moving on, I got some more information. This gets interesting. Just like I just told you about that Rockefeller, that's just a food for thought, that Rockefeller Foundation article that they wrote saying about a scenario about a bombing in the Olympics. Now, just recently, they had a drill in London just preparing for if there was a bomb. I mean, it was a real, they used some money for this drill. I mean, it was a real drill about, you know, what if this would happen? Okay, so in May 2004, a BCC paranoia program was broadcasted featuring a mock exercise of a terrorist attack in London with a bombing of three underground trains and a road vehicle. This was the very same scenario that was to take place in the 2005 bombing of the Olympic bombs. So they had a drill in which it was an exercise that something really happened. Okay, we talked about last week that the whole thing about the 2012 Olympics, London Olympics, is about the one of the geopolitical researchers, Irene Crane, goes on to further predict that a fake alien invasion will take place. Who knows if that will happen? Who knows? Whatever, but it's things to watch for. Okay, because what you got to think about, this is what you got to think about. Who will command us to be watching? If you were a security guard, you're not just watching for one. If you watch for one person, if you just watch for one person, if you just like, well, I'm just going to watch for, let's just say I'm going to watch for, I'm just going to watch for Hispanic people. You know, I'm going to watch for all the Hispanic people doing. So what about the white people? What about the black people? What about this? What about that? So us being watching, we're watching everything. So yes, some things may not happen, you know, or some things might not go on, but we're watching. We're watching, and we're watching the state. We're watching because we have to inform, and we have to blow the trumpet. We have to blow the trumpet. When we see something, a potential, something to happen, we have to blow the trumpet in order for, if it happens, you know, people to be prepared. So this is some things that we're going over and some things to watch. Also, some interesting information. There's a program called Spooks, Code 9, was a spy drama series broadcasted by BBC, August 2008, was set in 2012 in the aftermath of a nuclear attack at the London Olympics that had taken place during the opening ceremony. So there are several scenes in the drama in which the background contains an all-seeing eye symbol, which displays on the dollar notes, as commonly placed in the background on logos of many corporations. It is thought that the signal was a code for a message from the Illuminati. So a lot of things, we got the glasses. I don't know if you got to see that movie, They Live, but, you know, he put on the glasses, he would see what's really going on. And so all these symbols that they're putting in movies, like if you go back and look now at movies, they'll have a lot of information that basically they were showing that the Masons were putting stuff about 9/11 in the movies. Basically saying that this is not a freak accident, this not just happened, people did not just plan to, oh, we're going to bomb something. No, this was created by design. And we talked about last week, if you look at the 2012 Olympics logo, it spells out Zion. And who are the and we know the design is always behind these. So in this program, Spooks Code 9, you have the all Illuminati eye behind the, you know, the things, and also depicted on the Westcott and Menville icons, which I posted on my Facebook. You got to see, but they are one-eyed mascots. They are the official mascots of 2012 Olympics. We know the one eye is a symbol for the Illuminati, which basically says, you know, they're watching, that they're it's a lie, because they feel like Hashatan paints this picture as though he is omniscient. That's why they have the one eye, because it's a symbol of being. And actually, when you really go back and you go back further and you go back to the ancient pictogram, what they actually did, they have worshipped that symbol, because that symbol actually was the Yin, which was a symbol of an eye. So what they had did, they had taken that ancient symbol, and that symbol meant kind of having to feel, because that's in Yahusha's name, you know, Yod-Heh-Ur-Shin-Ayin, you know, which was the eye at the end, which was showing his omniscience, you know, in his name. When you look at the pictogram, you had the hands, you had the man, you had the nail, you had the teeth, and then you had the eye. You know, all these things, you know, because back in the day when they made, before the Hebrew script evolved, it was pictures. So you can understand, hey, this name, you know, the man crushed by the nail is omniscient. You know, it is powerful. You know, so they used that symbol, and now they're using that symbol, and they took that all the way from you know, the Phaeacians, and now, you know, Hashtag trying to paint this picture as though he's out mission. And so they're going to use programs like IBM, you know, Google with their new privacy laws, trying to put everybody into a database. You know, this system is connected to IBM, in which all these tools the Son of Perdition will use in order to create an illusion in which it makes people believe that he's on mission. We talked about Oricom, who signed the deal with Verochip, in which Oricom has satellites all over the world, a satellite provider, in which they are connected with the makers of the RFID chip. So what that means is, how do you think RFID chips are tracked to and fro all across the world? By satellites, by satellites. How are they tracked? So if products are tracked and people will eventually become products, how do you think that people won't be tracked? How do you think people, you become a slave to the beast? So we're telling people now, hey, the end result is we're telling people now, hey, do not take the mark of the beast. You know what I'm saying? Right now, we already know that the mark of the beast, 666, Chi Psi Sigma, ancient Greek, is Jesus Christ, who the real name of the Messiah is, Yahushua the Messiah. So when we get back to what we're talking about, we were talking about that we're talking about how these programs, these TV shows, these things that they have released, the logo, all these things point to some event that is coming. And you remember what happened with 9/11? They blamed on somebody in order to go to war with somebody. Okay, so what if you have the same scenario? We talked about it. They blame who is America? Obama released a statement that Iran is not a Israeli problem, but America problem. So who does America have a problem with now? Iran. And Obama is painting this mass message to the American people that he's not going to war with them because, you know, he's waiting for whatever. But what would perpetrate him going to war with Iran is an event. So that's what we're watching right there. We're watching this, and we continue to watch this and keep you up to breath about, you know, the events that are going down. But you're still listening to Poetic Energy Network Station. This is your whole side, and we're still on the way. Hey, so we're moving on, and we're going to talk about now. You asked him, we want to get into, you know what's coming up. The Pesach of Yahuwah is coming up very soon. We're in the 12th month. We're in 12th Hebrew month right now. So you have the Pesach. You have the Pesach coming up, which is we're in 12th month right now. So the Pesach is coming up, and so we want to get into some things because we have a lot of people out there. A lot of brothers, a lot of these things cause division. You know, when we come back to the Torah and we start to learn about the ways, a lot of these things cause division. I mean, simple things. You know, yes, the name is going to cause division because, hey, he said, you know, the name is above all names. Yahushua said the name is above all names. And if we're to properly keep the, you know, commandments, and he says, don't bring my name to vain, well, we got to know what the name is. So, yes, that will cause division. And, you know, and that's understandable because Yahushua said, he did not come to bring priests, to bring the sword. So we know things like the name of God. But there are some minor things when we get back to the Torah, in which Shaul talked about that people wrangle over and people who don't have understanding, they go and they say this and they, you know, they'll forsake, you know, brethren for minor discrepancies and different things like that. Well, we're getting into the month of Abib, and you know, all of us are learning and continuing to learn how to keep the month of Abib and keep Yahuwah's calendar, because we know the Gregorian calendar is false. So when we look into keeping the commandments, one of the commandments, when we go back to Deuteronomy, we have scripture, go back to turn to Deuteronomy. You go to Deuteronomy 16. You go to Deuteronomy 16:1. You go to Deuteronomy 16:1. It says, "Guard the new moon of Abib, and perform the Pesach to Yahweh-Elohim. For in the new moon of Abib, Yahweh-Elohim brought you out of the out of Mizraim by night." So it says, "You shall slaughter the Pesach to Yahweh-Elohim from the flock and the herd in a place where Yahweh chooses to put his name." Okay. So we really want to get into that real quick, and we're going to read a little bit of this. But what you got to understand, we were talking about this, you know, just breaking it down, looking at Hebrews 16:1, it says, read. It says, "You are to observe," which is Hebrews 81:04, "the month of Hebrews 23:20. Okay? So first the word translated here is 23:20, Kodesh. It says, which is properly means new moon or a month. And when you look at the word in Hebrew, it says observe, the it says is 81:04 Shema. It says to guard, to protect, to attend, to be circumspect, to take heed, to mark, to look narrowly, to observe, preserve, regard, it says reserve, wait for, watchman. Okay? So a lot of people have discrepancies over, number one, even how to observe the new moons. And when you look into Hebrew, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's the dark month. And so we're going to get into that doctrine right real quick, too. You know, the scriptures tell us to be watchmen or to watch and to look narrowly upon or closely for the new moon. And so what you got to remember is they have a thing, like if you look in your calendar, they have a thing called the astronomical conjunction or the dark invisible new moon, and which the world calls the new moon. For what exactly, you know, but the commandment in 16:1 says look narrowly upon to for a watchman, because you have to be watching. Because according to, you know, just looking at his laws and understanding that the moon goes dark, and then it comes out again, and the light from the sun hits the moon, and you see the first look. So we have to be watchful. And I want to read some evidence that shows you, you know, even back in the day they had, you know, watchmen were always accompanied by two things. You know, they would always have two things. Even remember when somebody got murdered, you know, one person couldn't accuse, they had to have, you know, they had to have somebody, you know, watch. You know what I'm saying? It had to be more than one thing. And by two or three witnesses, everything will be established. You know, that word observe is watchman too. You know, and watchmen were always, nobody could, there's never really been just one watchman. There's always been two witnesses. Even Yahushua said, the Yahudim of the day said, oh, well, your witness is not valid. But Yahushua said, there are two witnesses, him and the Father. There's two witnesses. And then you have, remember, in the end times, you're going to have Enoch and Eliyahu, two witnesses, coming to bear witness of the truth. You always have two witnesses. Okay, so I'm reading from the Encyclopedia of Judicia, Volume 2, page 1039. It says, originally, the new moon was not fixed by astronomical calculations, but was solely proclaimed after witnesses had testified to the reappearance of the crescent of the new moon. And what they would do is they would send, what? Watchmen, two watchmen, to bear testimony that what they seen was true. And they would come back and they would blow the shofar and it will be declared a new moon. So these are the ancient paths in which, you know, a lot of people say, well, and, you know, well, what about this verse and this verse? We're going to read a little bit more. We're not going to get too much onto that, but a lot of people use what we use to Tehillim 81, and we're going to get into that real quick. It says to switch over from watching, and what you got to remember is that the world observes the new moon, and we don't follow the way of the nations. The world observes the new moon as the conjunction, the dark moon, you know, and that's just not true, you know. And the switch over from watching the first visible crescent to calculating conjunctions to determine the month's beginning came with Hiller's II's calendar reversion in the 4th century CE. By the middle of the 4th century, the sages were established a permanent calendar and public proclamation of the new moon was discontinued. So after the 4th century, you had Hiller's calendar of reversions in which they started observing the calculations of the conjunctions, and they were no longer observing the ancient way of Yahuwah in which he sent, you know, to, you know, the watchmen, and they were no longer going according to Deuteronomy 16. They were no longer going to that. So here the word to observe in Hebrew is shamar, which also means to look narrowly for, search. The consensus Hebrew and Aramaic lexicon defines watching in a sense for looking for. Vine's complete dictionary of the Old and New Testament concludes that the definitions are mark or watchman, wait, watch, look narrowly. The command is to look for, wait for, watch, mark the new moon. So that's what, we only got in one sentence of Deuteronomy 16, so we were all supposed to watch for the barley, because, you know, the barley had to be to a certain, and I'm learning more that I don't know if it actually had to be at the end of the month that the barley had to be ripe, but it had to be ripe in order, the barley had to be ripe in being able to be made to the stage of flour before you had the wave offering of the sheaf by the high priest. So that had to be happening. As far as, you know, by the end of the month, I don't know. But, the you know, the barley had to be a beef, and the word a beef means ripening or harvest, or to the point of, you know, maturity. And it had to be that, to that point in which it was just ripe, and because that's what all these symbols and all these things make sense that we talked about last week, a couple weeks ago, that you have the barley harvest first, and then you have the wheat harvest. And so the barley are kind of like in a symbol like the 144,000 that will be in the end, in which they will be ripe, they will be mature, and they will stand before Yahuwah, before the throne, even when we read it right here. Let's go to Revelation 14. Revelation 14, and he's talking about the barley right now. We're talking about all these symbol things, you know, mean, everything he told us what people call the Old Testament, that's not, meant something. So you had the barley, and you had them were standing, he says, and I looked, and I, this is Revelation 14:1, I looked and I saw the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000 with his father's name and his name written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven like the burst of many waters, like the voice of a loud thunder. And I heard the sound of harps playing in their hearts. And they sang a renewed song before the throne, and before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one was able to learn the song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. Okay, so these were, look, and I'm going to show you how the 144,000 were a bead. They were mature, they were ripe. Because what it says in verse 4, it says, these are those who have not defiled with women. They are like maidens. They are following the Lamb wherever he leads them. They were redeemed from among men, being first fruits to Elohim and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no falsehood. for they are blameless before the throne of Elohim. They were blameless. They were mature. They got to the point where they were blameless, where no lie, deceit was found in their mouth, because they had in their walk, in their spiritual walk, they had matured to the point where they were right. And so because they were right, they were redeemed. So just like in the month of Abib, in the first week, they would take the sheep and they would cut the barley that was ripe, that was the bead, and it had to be to that, you know, it was getting to that golden stage, and it was getting to the point where it could be made into flour. Because if it's too early, it will be too liquidy, and you won't be able to make it to dough. And if it's too hard, you know, it will be past the point of being able to make the flour. So it had to be right there to the point where they cut it with the sheep, and the high priest would wave it before Yahuwah. You know, so here's the 144,000 are waving, and other verses say that, you know, they had palm trees and everything like that, and Ezra and things like that. So then we talk about, after that comes the wheat harvest, which is Pentecost, but we're talking about Abib right now. We're talking about the 144,000 that will be ripe, you know. So we're going to continue to, that's going to be our lesson for the next couple of weeks, is we're going to, Yah willing, and we're going to continue to talk about the month of Abib and about, you know, how to observe it and what's going on with that, because we need to know how to keep the Pesach. And when it talks about Deuteronomy 16, when it talks about Deuteronomy 16, 1, when it talks about Deuteronomy 16:1, it says you'll perform the Pesach. It says we are to slaughter the Pesach to Yahuwah Elohim. And so we know that the Pesach was a lamb, and we know that now the lamb, it was Yahushua. And he was slaughtered unto Yahuwah for the forgiveness of sins. And everybody that ever called upon his name will be, you know, and walk in the poor will be forgiven for their sin. And so the unleavened bread now is us. You know, we have to, you know, Yahushua was that unleavened bread who walked without a sin. So we're supposed to walk like him. We're supposed to, you know, walk like the unleavened bread. And we are to eat the Pesach. We are to eat the Pesach. Because remember Yahushua said, when he sat with the disciples, he said, you know, he was telling the doctor, he said, you know, y'all won't enter the kingdom unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood. He was like, oh man, how in the world are we going to eat you? If you're a cannibal or something, you know, how are we going to eat your flesh? Eat your blood. But he was saying that the you know, even if they understood that example, that the unleavened bread was eating with the Passover. So we are to eat his words, because his words are life. And remember, he said, you shall not eat off bread alone, but every word that comes out of my mouth. So we are to eat upon his word, and we are the leavened bread. So the unleavened bread is the, you know, it goes along with the Passover, you know, and it's offered to Yahuwah. So that is what now. So now, you know, we're coming up upon, and a lot of people, you know, we can prepare unleavened bread. But just remember, as we prepare unleavened bread, and as you know, we have that with the, because we don't have to slaughter the lamb, because the lamb has already been slaughtered. So we just give thanks and praises to Yahuwah for him sending the lamb, Yahushua. Remember, Yehoshua said, "Behold, the Lamb of Elohim who takes away the sins of the world." So now the lamb has been slain, and we are able to eat unleavened bread. So a lot of people prepare unleavened bread. And if you like, you know, I know my wife has some recipes and different things. You know, we can eat unleavened bread, and we can, you know, you clean your house of leaven. And we're going to get into that later, that cleaning your life house of leaven is symbolic of cleaning your life of sin. And anything that, you know, it says, you know, remember, I think Hebrews said, set aside every sin that's so easily besets us. You know, so we're supposed to cleanse our life, cleanse our minds, you know, of things that are easily besetting us. What sins that we have, cleanse it all the way and give it to Yahuwah, and, you know, make sure we have no leaven in our temples. You know, so symbolically we do that, and we learn how to do that with our house. You know, we go through, we look at products, you know, what has leaven in, what has leaven in. And this is symbolically showing, hey, we need to get our lives right and get, you know. So we're going to continue to talk about this We want to open it up. We have a couple of weeks, and we're going to continue. This is going to be one of the blessings we're going to continue to do. I want to get into this. We have a couple minutes left on. We have a couple minutes left on the thing about the new moons, and I mean this is some evidence. You know, you might just want to look up. You know, and because a lot of people, you know, I've met people, and I know some brothers out there, and we get into conflicts over these things that if we really could sit down and talk about, and really people show the different views. I mean that it would really, but you know, the word "who" is not to be adulterated, especially with brothers and sisters. Nobody is. We're all brothers. That's what you all have to remember. Is yes, we teach each other. Yes, we learn everything, but we're all brothers. There's no pastors. There's nobody above this person who can down these people. So you have a lot of people that's like Shaul said, like the Colossians, who these people would judge people and condemn them, and would condemn them of not even being in the faith because you believe this way. You know, you believe and you observe the new moons and according to, you know, because that's all Yahuwah desires of us, not sacrifice. He doesn't desire sacrifice. And so that's what I'm learning is, hey, he doesn't desire sacrifice. Yeah, you can read, you can fast, you can do all these things, but what he really wants you to do is obey his voice. That's it. Obey his word, obey his command. So you can do all these things, and you can learn all these things, but when it gets down to it, you have to obey his voice. That's what it gets down to, is obeying his voice. And so what has happened is the spirit of pride and being puffed up. You know, because I'm still learning on the new moons and observing the bees, because I've thought, you know, a lot of things that I've come to knowledge of that's not been true and things I've learned. That, but what I want to read Colossians 2, and I want to read Colossians 2 and 16. It says, "Let no one therefore judge you in eating or drinking in respect of festivals or new moons or Sabbaths, which are shadow, which is shadow of things to come, but the body is the Messiah. Let no one deprive you of your prize, and let, it says, the one who takes delight in false humility and the worship of messengers, it says, taking a stand on what he has not seen, puffed up by a flesh and mind, not holding fast the head from whom the body, nourishment, knit, joined together, ligaments, grows." So a lot of people are puffed up, you know, with the knowledge, and a lot of people are puffed up with fleshy minds and this false humility, and depriving people of their prize because, you know, oh, you may keep new moon, or we're not the judge. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to compromise, hey, on keeping the Sabbath. The verse is not saying, hey, you're not supposed to keep the Sabbath, you're not supposed to do this. A lot of people sit there and judge you and deprive you of your prize because, you know, you have this. So all we do is state the facts. Hey, if you want to keep it like that, hey, so be it. You know, we're not going to, them all that stuff. But hey, it says, but this is some evidence as far as, you know, Hebrews 81:3. And like I said, all I am doing is presenting evidence, hey, of how Yahuwah has show me as far as how the new moons and how the month of Abib is to be kept. And so, you know, a lot of people, I looked into this, the Tehillim 81:3 is, you know, when you look at this in Hebrew, a lot of people say, well, you know, this shows the different sects. But in fact, the Hebrew is two distinctive clauses. That there is a division. One, the first one is for applies to the new moon. The second applies to the Somli feast day. And I have some the biblical Hebrew. One of the dictionaries says, you know, it just translated, "Blow the trumpet in the new moon and the fullness of our feast day." The NIV Hebrew English Old Testament says, "Sound the ram's horn on the new moon, and when the moon is full, on our feast, Yahudim Bible says, found the shofar on the rock Hadashah, which is the new moon, and at the full moon of our pilgrim feast. And so it goes on. It says, these Hebrew-based translations show that the new moon is different from the full moon and different from the feast, from a feast day. It says, the Hebrew shows that the new moon and the full moon are not simultaneous. First, it says, the first is barely visible, the second, totally visible. Different words used for each. So, you know, Hebrew words, okay, and this is another point right here. It says, the Hebrew word lentana means white, occurs three times in Hebrew text, and poetically refers to the white brilliance of the full moon. See Psalms and Solomon 6:10, Isaiah. It says the Hebrew word kashah, which means fullness, is twice translated new moon. It said it's twice translated new moon, Tehillim 81:3, Proverbs 7:20. Kadash, on the other hand, refers to the new moon crescent. It says which is never used for the full moon. So, we just wanted to share that with you, that, you know, according to some scriptures, it's never really evidence to back, you know, that the Gregorian calendar way of how people observe the new moon, how people look and observe Deuteronomy 16:1, in which it is shown that we are to be watchmen, and how they used to send watchmen, and they didn't change it till Hillel's calendar. And so we wanted to just present that to you so you get a chance, you know, look that up. But, hey, it's been a blessing to be with you today. Man, I hope it's going down. Man, you better be ready, because, you know, who are willing? If we're here next week, I know some things going down. Man, we got to be prepared, man, because the new year of Yahuwah is coming up. I mean, you got the new year of Yahuwah is coming up, the beginning of new year, Yahuwah's new year, and you know things are going to go down in that year, next year. You know that we got to continue to watch, man. So Yahuwah bless you and keep your family. May his face shine upon you, and may he just give you blessings, man, and just watch over you and protect you. And may you be worthy to escape those things which come upon the world. So, hey, you already know, each and every week it's going down on the way, Blog Talk Radio Show. Man, we got some interesting events coming up on the Blog Talk Radio Show for you, man. I just pray you stay tuned to come and broadcast. But, hey, spread the word for the show, man. We're going to try to do big things recently through Yahushua the Messiah. But, hey, man, we love you, and we're out of here.
And not only the image, but even down to the name, where it's only in modern English that we have the name Jesus. A couple of hundred years ago, that name never existed.
The mainstream media is ignoring this information. Most of the alternative media is also ignoring it.
The way.